Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we actually have another leaked email from Elon Musk to talk about. This is actually not to Tesla employees, but rather to SpaceX employees. It's been a bit quieter of a Tesla news day. We still have some things to cover there, but I think this is probably the most interesting thing for us to talk about today. So we'll start off with that. Then we also have some news on Tesla's collaboration and development of the GigaPress casting machines. We've also got a couple of small updates on the status of the potential US EV tax credit, a little bit of follow-up on Giga Texas and a couple other topics, and some news in the solar industry as well. We'll start off with the stock though. Tesla today actually faring very strongly given the macro environment, finishing up 0.2% to $1,144.76, while the NASDAQ was down a little bit more than 1.5% on the day. The S&P and the Dow were both down about 1.9%, so for Tesla to finish up in that sort of environment, really strong day relatively. Quick Form 4 check. No other Form 4s have been filed since we've last discussed. This is as of market close, so we'll see if we see any more today. But right now, the last batch of those still from November 23rd. All right, getting into the news then. As I said, we're going to start off with a leaked Elon Musk email here to SpaceX employees. So I know not necessarily directly relevant to Tesla, but whatever Elon is doing always has some relevance. And I think just with a lot of the rumors about maybe a SpaceX IPO or Starlink IPO or whatever, that I don't think are particularly well-founded, but as that has been a bit of a conversation over the last few days, I thought this was probably even more relevant than it would normally be. So I do want to talk about this email anyway. It appeared first from Space Explored, offshoot of 9to5Mac. Page layout there probably looks familiar to many of you. Anyway, this has been verified by other outlets, including by yours truly, so I can attest that this is an email that was sent. Space Explored kind of broke it up into chunks, so let's just look at the email in full here. The Verge did share that. This was sent to SpaceX employees on Friday, so the day after Thanksgiving, in regards to Raptor engine production, which of course is the next generation engine that SpaceX is designing and manufacturing for Starship. So the email reads, quote, "Unfortunately, the Raptor production crisis is much worse than it seemed a few weeks ago. As we have dug into the issues following exiting prior senior management, they have unfortunately turned out to be far more severe than was reported. There is no way to sugarcoat this. I was going to take this weekend off as my first weekend off in a long time, but instead I will be on the Raptor line all night and through the weekend. Unless you have critical family matters or cannot physically return to Hawthorne, we need all hands on deck to recover from what is, quite frankly, a disaster. The consequences for SpaceX if we can't get enough reliable Raptors made is that we then can't fly Starship, which means we can't fly Starlink Satellite V2. Falcon has neither the volume nor the mass orbit needed for Satellite V2. Satellite V1 by itself is financially weak, whereas V2 is strong. In addition, we are spooling up terminal production to several million units per year, which will consume massive capital, assuming that Satellite V2 will be on orbit to handle the bandwidth demand. These terminals will be useless otherwise. What it comes down to is that we face genuine risk of bankruptcy if we cannot achieve a Starship flight rate of at least once every 2 weeks next year. Thanks, Elon." End quote. Okay, so a very serious tone in this email from Elon, of course, mentioning bankruptcy risk there at the end. Just to briefly touch on that, I think we've talked a little bit about this with Tesla back when the Model 3 was ramping up, Elon saying Tesla was weeks away from bankruptcy. I think the situation here for SpaceX is probably quite similar in that, yes, it's probably technically true that if they don't resolve this, just like if Tesla hadn't been able to resolve Model 3 production, ultimately that could have led to bankruptcy. But of course, there are other options on the table. Tesla at the time was a $40, $50 billion company. They definitely could have raised capital, maybe not in perpetuity, but certainly enough to buy them more than just a few weeks of time, and that's not to take away from the pressure that Tesla had on it at that time. It's just to note that there were options available, and that's also the case for SpaceX today. SpaceX is valued right around $100 billion, and there certainly doesn't seem to be any shortage of capital interested at that valuation. So SpaceX has a lot of access to capital, even on the private market, and if not, well, Elon Musk just sold a bunch of Tesla stock and generated billions of dollars of his own personal wealth that he could invest if needed. And there's plenty more Tesla shares where that money came from. So bankruptcy risk in the short term for SpaceX is, I would go as far as saying, non-existent. Now, if they can't figure this out in a few years, then maybe it's a conversation. But with how Elon's worth has risen, he can kind of fund this for as long as he wants to. At any rate, as far as how this may affect the likelihood or not of a SpaceX IPO or a Starlink spinoff at this point, some have the viewpoint that this increases the likelihood because SpaceX might try to do that to raise capital. I think it actually decreases the likelihood because I think SpaceX wants this to be in a good position before they do anything like that. And that's based on my belief that they have pretty good access to capital, even within the private market. So yes, maybe it would be a little bit less dilutive if they were to go public and raise capital through that route, but it also comes with a whole lot of other headaches that Elon does have experience with. And although he did note yesterday that a lot has changed in the last 8 years in regards to some of his comments about SpaceX being private, those headaches do still exist. And even though the market has been supportive of early stage growth companies, negative cash flow, negative earnings, an environment that would be very beneficial for SpaceX right now, that especially can change very quickly. Anyway, of course, what matters most is SpaceX being able to figure these things out. Hopefully they can do that. Elon was asked about this today in a question that I appreciate the form of. It says, how's the Raptor thing going? Elon saying, it's getting fixed. Oh, and then of course, as I am recording this, Elon did tweet a little bit more about this situation, replying to a Tasmanian article about this topic saying, quote, if a severe global recession were to drop capital availability slash liquidity while SpaceX was losing billions on Starlink and Starship, then bankruptcy, while still unlikely, is not impossible. GM and Chrysler went bankrupt last recession, end quote. Then he adds a quote that says, only the paranoid survive by growth. So if you imagine a huge global recession where, let's say, Tesla loses 70% of their value, 80% of the value, or something like that, it's obviously super unlikely, but it's not impossible. Elon's worth from Tesla would fall below $100 billion. Something like that would dry up a lot of the liquidity in the private market. If all that happened and SpaceX still hadn't resolved these issues and didn't seem to have a path to doing that, then access to capital would become slightly difficult unless it's from Elon. But selling his Tesla shares at a super depressed valuation, not a great outcome either. So I think just the general essence of all that is what Elon is trying to get across here. And thinking about this in the context of Elon selling some of his Tesla stock, I do wonder if maybe he just wants to have a little bit of a cash pile to maybe de-risk situations like that. So maybe he just sits on some of that cash or puts it in something like what Tesla has done with Bitcoin. Anyway, we'll wrap up this topic just bringing back that Tesla Model 3 ramp up analogy one more time, because I think SpaceX very much in that phase right now where they're trying to essentially ramp up Starship and all the related businesses around it. That involves a lot of investment with zero return until they can actually get through that phase. That's just like the Model 3 in 2017. So it's very much crunch time for SpaceX right now, and if and when they get through this, it'll yield very exciting times for the company, just like the Model 3 has for Tesla. All right, moving on from that, next we're going to talk about Tesla's giant casting machines, often called gigapresses, that they have developed in combination with Eiger Group. As I've mentioned in the past, Eiger Group is actually owned by a Chinese company called LK Group, and the New York Times just did a profile on their work together with Tesla. I think unsurprisingly to many of us, this wasn't just Tesla going out there and finding a machine, ordering it off the rack to build their cars. Tesla was pretty deeply involved in the process here. This is from the founder of LK Group saying that they worked side by side with Tesla for over a year to make the gigapresses that Tesla is using today. He says, quote, every once in a while, they would ask us whether it was possible to do this or that. With each revision they made, we needed to make change in our machine too, end quote. Now that Tesla's kind of proven that concept, one of the big questions has been, okay, when are other automakers going to start doing this? And also unsurprisingly, sounds like that'll first be happening in China. So LK saying that they will be supplying similar casting machines to six Chinese companies by early 2022. Their founder noting that the way Tesla is making cars has, quote, created great pressure on traditional automakers. They have all realized how serious the situation is and are transitioning to new energy vehicles, end quote. Not sure I fully agree that they've all fully realized how serious the situation is, but yes, obviously things moving in that direction. As for the Chinese automakers, he says that they are talking to them about building machines, but that the majority of them are still in the design process, and that, quote, we have a bottleneck of designers in China, end quote. So it does sound like that faster following, again, unsurprisingly, happening in China, but even there are still some impediments to keeping pace with Tesla. Last piece of this that I found pretty interesting is that the founder of LK Group did say that Tesla's goal of making 20 million cars per year was ambitious, but quote-unquote not unattainable because Tesla had simplified the manufacturing process. This reminded me of the discussion that we had with Alex Potter when we were talking about how suppliers these days are so much more bought in to Tesla's plans than they were even just a couple years back. That should be a huge positive for Tesla going forward. All right, next up here, I wanted to briefly revisit those Texas registration documents that we've talked about a couple of times. Most recently, we noted the review complete status, and I asked if anyone had any better insight into what that truly meant. So I want to thank Mauser on Twitter for doing a little bit of digging on that, and it looks like that is not fully all the way through the process. First off, the status dropdown does have four different statuses, so project registered and review complete are the two that we have seen so far. The other two are then project closed and inspection complete, and these are just listed alphabetical, so not necessarily in the order of operations. But digging into the frequently asked questions a little bit might give us some more insight on that. Question number 11 is, when is there a deadline for a plan review? Reads, quote, when a project is registered in TABS, it must have a plan review anytime prior to inspection, unless registered by the TDLR as a special registration. However, when a plan review is shared, there is a 30-day deadline for accepting the RAS to complete the plan review, end quote. So summing that up, it looks like the plan review happens prior to inspection, and I believe the plan review is what was completed, so I think now we are just awaiting the inspection. That seems to be confirmed a little bit further by the registration help sheet PDF that they share that says after registration, you follow two steps, the plan review and the inspection. What the timeline for inspection might look like, I don't know, but that does seem to still be a remaining step for approval here for Texas. Next, we've got a couple of updated comments on the status of the potential U.S. federal EV tax credit that sits in the budget reconciliation bill. It's obviously moved into the Senate. Reuters is reporting here on comments made by both of Michigan's senators. Obviously, they have a vested interest in the union portion of the EV tax credit. So they say that, quote, Senator Debbie Stabenow of Michigan told Reuters on the sidelines of an event about the semiconductor shortage that she strongly supports the union EV credit, quote, but we know we're going to have to work something out with Manchin, end quote. As for Michigan's other senator, Gary Peters, he was asked if the final provision could include a smaller union bonus or something that could make other automakers eligible that had higher labor standards. Peters said, quote, I think a lot's on the table right now, end quote. And he added, quote, I wouldn't want to negotiate in public as to what it's going to look like, but it's likely to change, end quote. So those aren't the most confidence-inspiring statements from both of Michigan senators in regards to that union portion of the EV credit. And remember, that is really what facilitates plug-in hybrids getting such a high credit, because a plug-in hybrid just has to have a 10 kilowatt hour battery pack, and then it ends up being eligible for that entire 4,500 union-built credit as well. So in my view, if that does end up getting cut out, that saves a lot of the really messed up incentives that this creates. So I'm pretty happy to see these comments with, again, Senator Peters here saying that he thinks it's likely to change, at least in some fashion. I think it is still likely going to be some time before this gets fully hashed out. Congress right now needs to kind of figure out the debt ceiling and what's going on with government funding for the short term. So at least to me, and I don't follow it super closely, but it seems like the budget is taking a slight backseat to that this week at least. All right, next up here, I did want to make a couple of corrections slash additions. So first up on the GM stuff that we talked about with that Mary Barra interview yesterday, I've now realized that her response was likely just for total automotive market share rather than just electric vehicle market share, even though she was specifically asked about that in the question she was responding to. So while I do still feel that that's an incredibly misleading, obviously I didn't even understand what was going on with her response there, and disingenuous way to answer the question, not even answer the question because she didn't, but respond to the question. While I do still feel that way, I also don't think it's fair to then outright accuse her of lying because technically I don't believe that she did lie, though she obviously refused to answer the question that was asked. Now, I do feel the other instance that we talked about where she responded absolutely to being able to catch up with Tesla in electric vehicles by 2025, I do feel like given GM's stated plans that don't seem to allow any path for that to happen, that does make that very close to lying and at minimum is misinformed and or misleading. But it is very important for me to make sure that I'm not mischaracterizing things, so I did just want to make a correction on my thoughts on that from yesterday. The other supplemental information that I wanted to add was in regards to a topic we discussed last week. That was a workers' council forming at Giga Berlin. So I've had a bit more time to understand that situation better, and thanks to those of you that have shared your insight on that as well. But just to add to that, so we previously had talked about the differences between union and workers' council. So union, generally industry-wide, while a works council is internal, a union would have dues, works council would not. So we talked about those two, but just a couple of other details too. So a works council in Germany ends up basically being required for any big company because it only essentially requires like 3 to 7 people to want to have one. There's no required percentage of the workforce that needs to want to have one. So essentially any large enough workforce, there's going to be at least, you know, 3 people that want it. So this is essentially an inevitability and something that Tesla would have expected probably from the start. Then a couple of other differences. Generally, the Works Council is not getting involved in salaries or strikes like a union might. And then the Works Council will also have some sort of representation on the board. But this doesn't necessarily mean Tesla's actual board of directors internationally, but rather that there would be some representation on whatever the German entity is. So hopefully that helps clarify the understanding a little bit. It also doesn't mean that there's no overlap potential between Works Councils and unions. I mean, we saw IG Metal post about this originally. So there can be overlap and often similar influences by both. Those things shouldn't then just be brushed aside, but hopefully that helps again with the differences between the two. All right, lastly today, just kind of a fun update on the solar industry. This is actually from about a week and a half ago, but we're just catching up on it now. This was reported by reneweconomy.com.au. And the report is that last Sunday, South Australia became the first gigawatt scale grid in the world to reach zero demand for essentially grid generated electricity. So said another way, basically all local energy production, so rooftop solar and other things like that, at least for a short period of time, was generating enough power to cover all the power needs for South Australia. So pretty cool milestone, and definitely highlights the need for a lot of stationary storage to get through situations like this, because it is challenging for the grid to deal with not having somewhere to put that energy during those periods where demand does drop to zero. All right, so that is it for today then. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And we'll see you tomorrow for the first day of the last month of 2021, last month of Q4, December 1st episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.